We collectively need spiritual guidance and ministry to help our faith life now as much as ever. That applies to everyone. What do the nation's police forces do for that kind of help in such an intensely demanding service? I'm Sheila Lagminas. Time for a closer look.
Out across America. In so many communities, the peaceful protesters welcomed by the officers. In Bellevue, Washington, Police Chief Steve Milet and a demonstrator embracing. In Miami, you could see the line of law enforcement and then the moment it all changes. A highway patrol trooper walking up to this woman, hugging her. She was grateful.
I love you, man. I love you, man.
In New York's Times Square, an officer who was kneeling, raising his arms, a demonstrator then shaking his hand, the two then hug. You could hear the cheers erupting in the crowd.
A closer look on Relevant Radio.
The only reason we're here is to make sure that you got a voice. That's it.
There we go.
Don't think for a second. Don't think for a second that he represents who these cops are from all over the county and around this nation. We go out there to help people, not do that nonsense.
There we go.
I'm just going to tell you. We want to be with y'all for real. So I took my helmet off and laid the batons down. I want to make this a parade, not a protest. These cops love you. That cop over there hugs people. So you tell us what you need to do.
Walk with us. 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 Walk with us.
Let's walk with us. Let's walk.
Saying, we will protect you, we are with you. They said, march with us, and so he did. I'm David Muir, I will see you tomorrow.
A closer look with Sheila Lagminas.
On Relevant Radio and the Relevant Radio app.
Welcome to the program. Thanks for tuning in. What you just heard is it was a news clip of police officers working with and speaking to protesters, demonstrators, even with hugs, good wishes, some handshakes, and the ability to speak with each other about what each side needs, especially what the people need who are protesting, who are demonstrating. That's community service. Policing is community service and protection of their citizens. And I'm going to get right to that right now, the spiritual guidance of them, because they certainly need it very badly, as we all do, right? But in that profession especially, they really need the spiritual help of chaplains. And that's why I'm going to go straight to my guest now, because he is one, and he is in a hurry because he has a lot of his own ministry to take care of right now. Chicago Police Department Chaplain Reverend Daniel Brandt is here, who's also the director of the Chicago Police Chaplains Ministry. Father Brandt, welcome back. Thank you for taking the time to be here. I know you don't have much, but thank you for the time.
Thank you, Sheila. I'm sorry that I just found out about 10 minutes ago that I need to get in the car and get downtown. I've got to get to Northwestern. We've got two of our officers on their way there now, who were hurt in some skirmishes with these not protesters, but I don't mind protesters, anarchists, yeah, and rioters. So, and it's what we've been seeing, unfortunately, lately. Not the news has been shielding us from a lot of it, but it's what I've been seeing out there in the streets. It's just sad.
It is.
So anyway, I'm sorry. I'm going to have to keep things short so I can get to work.
You've got it. I'll try to keep this very fast. So on that note, Father Brandt, you are right. Depending on where people tune in for their news, they may not hear any of that. But one thing we do know, that there are demonstrators, and that's like Martin Luther King walking peacefully, placards, signs, and just walking together. And then it gets to protests that get angrier, and then it gets into full-blown rioting, looting, smash and grab, and it does get violent, burning police cars, destroying police stations, like what happened in, I think, Minnesota and other places. And so you've got, the police department has all of the above, and they really don't know, do they, Father Brandt, what quite they're going to deal with when they go out there to a given assignment on the streets?
Absolutely. It's constantly questioned. You don't know, you know, you may be speaking with some peaceful people on the front line, but then you've got, you know, troublemakers mixed into the crowd and enjoying mob mentality and throwing rocks over the front line into the police yeah. vehicles or, you know, the heads of the police officers. So unfortunately, while I'm all for people's First Amendment right to mm-hmm. to gather peacefully, unfortunately, some of these folks are opportunists and they take that chance. They take the opportunity. They manipulate that opportunity to cause damage and to loot and to set fires. You know, and it's just a sad part of the broken human condition, I suppose. We've all been cooped up for so long, thanks to right. stay-at-home orders that are, you know, certainly getting old for folks. And I think that all that pent-up aggression, you know, and then just not being able to get out, and all of a sudden they have that freedom to not only get out but act lawlessly. I think it's just a huge compound. It's an ugly mix, a toxic cocktail.
It is toxic, and I've seen one thing I have seen in some of the television news coverage on different networks, Father Brandt, is when there's an aerial shot and you see the looting and the running and the smashing and grabbing in and out of stores and the looting and the bags of things and the big electronics under arms and so forth. I've heard multiple studio anchors ask the reporter on in the helicopter or wherever they are up high, where are the police? They keep asking that. It's not the case that the police aren't trying to be everywhere, but they can't, A, be everywhere. And in some cases, maybe they just, because they're outnumbered maybe in some cases by the looters and the rioters, they what are often, not often, but sometimes told to stand back or stand down?
Here in Chicago they have been. And yeah, they've certainly been handcuffed as far as being able to do their job. And I think the opportunists are aware of that because people are coming in from different parts of the state. There have been arrests. You know, people from Galesburg and Carpentersville. I mean, Galesburg, that's hours away. They're coming here because they know they can't get away with it in their own places. You know, somewhere like DuPage County even. The state's attorney there, without getting into politics, state's attorney there made it very clear that people will be held accountable. And that doesn't seem to be the case locally. And so people are taking advantage of that opportunity to come here where they can get away with stuff, not to mention that larger numbers of people and you know, stores, more opportunities, but these folks have been fanning out, as you know. Yesterday they were in Elmhurst. Mm-hmm. They've been up far west that I know of is Wheaton and Naperville. The Yorktown Mall is shut down. Woodfield yep. Mall is shut down. Oakbrook Mall is shut down. I mean, it's bizarre. It's just a bizarre state of affairs, and it's really kind of frustrating and bothersome. I saw. Right in my own neighborhood, I'm in Logan Square, and the other night when we were out there, we've been out every night, the other chaplains and I, and just to remind our officers, hey, you're doing God's work, and just be out there because we can get to the hospital more quickly that way. We were at a few different hospitals last night. We had a horrific car crash after a lengthy chase, and two of our officers, I'm shocked that they survived that crash. I don't know if you saw the footage of it, but it was just horrendous. Anyway, by being out there, we can respond more quickly to the hospitals as these officers are having bricks chucked at their heads and, you know, getting dragged by their hair. I don't know if you saw that troubling footage of one of our female officers being dragged by an ugly mob. What I've witnessed firsthand is just a game of cat and mouse. Yes, we're outnumbered, not only because of local looters and rioters, but because of the outsiders coming in. The other thing is they're not able to, you know, if we could pull up a paddy wagon and just start putting people in it, that might solve the problem. You know, people might realize, oh, they mean business here. In many cases, they've been told not to do that. And I don't know the rationale. I'm sure there's some wisdom there by people much smarter than I. So I'm not going to question that. But there's definitely cause and effect. And the other night in my own neighborhood, I was heartbroken to see the lawlessness, people breaking into the Target where I go on a regular basis. There's a Target half a mile from my home, and it was broken into there to be 75 people running in and out of there with all kinds of stuff under their arms. And then the police would show up there. They'd leave there. They'd go across the street, basically, to the Micro Center, where they also rented a U-Haul truck, smashed through the front of the building, and they'd go there, and then the police would show up there. They'd go right back to Target. It was a ping pong tournament. It was just so saddening and frustrating. And I can't imagine what our officers are feeling as they continue to play cat and mouse and in what seems to be a losing game.
I know you need to get to your officers who are at Northwestern Hospital who have just gone there again because of what you're describing. They're getting rocks chucked at them and bricks and other things, dragged by the hair of a female officer. When these things happen, you have to go as the chaplain of the Chicago Police Department, Father Brandt, and tend to your people in the spiritual ministry you give, the healing spiritually and emotionally. But how do you do that? What is the service you can provide for these police officers? And tell us how that works for them.
Well, oftentimes it's ministry of presence. Just the fact that we're there last night, our first stop was Illinois Masonic because the officer who was there, his name is Juan, was very, very critically injured. He was, as my partner said, he looked like Jesus Christ in that final scene of Mel Gibson's Passion of the Christ with the blood all down his face. It was just awful and gory, and so we have to tend to him and both of his families, his wife and young child, and his parents and siblings, who all converged on the hospital, as well as his family in blue. There had to be 50 officers there who were either involved in that chase or were friends with him, partners with him, co-workers, and they could show up here and there. They obviously had work to do, and they had to get back out in the district, but they're concerned about their co-worker, and so it was a beautiful scene last night out in the ambulance bay. I called them all together and said, anybody join us with a little prayer for our brother Juan and our other brother Luis, who are fighting for their lives right now. Let's do that now. I can't force prayer in the workplace, of course, but they all jumped at the opportunity to join in a big circle right there outdoors in the ambulance bay. And we said some earnest prayers for those officers and for the safety of all our men and women in blue throughout the nation who are so bravely doing God's work out there in the streets and standing between chaos and order.
So, Father Brandt, because a lot of people in this country right now, and that includes some media, are not at all sympathetic to the officers who are so seriously injured, and they're people too, and they're out there to serve and to protect. And yet these things are happening, and you bring that humanity to us and the spirituality and the faith and the need for prayer. What can we do, all of us as citizens?
Be mindful that these men and women are our brothers and sisters and husbands and wives and children of to their parents. They are not robots. They have feelings. They feel pain in a physical often and quite often spiritual or psychological sense. They're real people, and they have hearts and souls. And I think just being mindful of that fact, as I witnessed firsthand them being spit on and, you know, bottles of urine being thrown at them in recent days and just being yelled at, screamed at, and they are not allowed to respond in any way. You know, they just have to stand there and take it as if they were robots. And I think just being mindful of that, I beg that your audience please keep them in their prayers. Mm-hmm. And maybe when you see an officer out on the street doing his or her job, again, God-ordained ministry, I like to call it, to the people of God, often the most vulnerable, they deserve a thank you. And I beg your listeners to not only pray for them, but if it's not a verbal thank you, just the sign language thank you of your hand on the heart, you know, coming off the heart. It really means a lot. It's amazing to me how, like, last night, for instance, we spent time in different neighborhoods. And in some neighborhoods, they'll stand there as you drive by and give you what's known as the one-finger salute. And and then you go to another neighborhood, and they're out there waving, thank you, officers, or God bless you, be safe. People offering, you know, want some water, want some, you know, can we get you anything? People handing out candy and you name it to these officers because of their gratitude. So it's amazing. They get both ends of it. The tremendous gratitude from people, and often those are the, you know, the tax-paying, more perhaps law-abiding folk, and then you've got folks who are just not so grateful for their work and not so respectful to them or their position. So have officers messed up over the years? Of course, we see it regularly, and that goes for any line of work, naturally. But other lines of work aren't making life or death, you know, instant decisions, split second decisions. If your accountant messes up your tax return, years later he can amend it and fix the problem and all is good. That's not the case in law enforcement, of course, and that's why they're a special breed and really do deserve our prayers. And again, you asked what your listeners can do. I think that's number one. Prayer to St. Michael, or even a you see a squad car pass by, maybe a quick Hail Mary or an Our Father, whatever. I think that prayer changes things, and I beg that gift from your listeners.
Father Brandt, be assured that it's already done. We've added the police force to our Family Rosary Across America, which takes place every evening, a couple hours from now. And then throughout the day, there's the Divine Mercy Chaplet at 3 o'clock. We already have the Family Rosary Across America is adding the police to the intentions this evening. Everybody listening to you coast to coast, I'm sure in their own way, maybe many have already started praying. And as you said, we will not be the silent majority. We will start speaking up. And as you said, even if it's the hand over the heart, when you see a member of the in blue, and men or women in blue of the police force, know that they are out there to serve and to protect, and we appreciate them and we want the good. I love the police chaplain's ministries, your Father Brandt slogan, and that, or motto. It's your partner has your back, but we've got your soul. And we want you to be reassured, and please tell them that this as well, that we are praying for them and their families. Father Brandt, thank you for all you do. You are doing the work of God. Thank you so much.
I'm grateful, and I'm grateful to our Archbishop for allowing this ministry to continue. It's been going on for, many, many, many decades. I'd say the better part of 100 years, just That's here vital. In Chicago. Started out by religious order, the Claretians, and carried on now by the diocese and ministry to our firefighters and paramedics, likewise, just such a key ministry. And I'd like to remember those folks, too, and their safety and well-being, because they're also out there in very dangerous situations. And oftentimes, even though they're there to help, the fire service, members of the fire service, are also being pelted with objects by opportunists and these criminals. I'd like to remember them as well in our prayers. And let's never forget our brave members of the military, especially those away from their
Absolutely.
Families.
Yeah. All of the above. We are praying for all of the above, all of those who serve, and for you who serve, those who serve. We're praying for you as well. You've got to find that fortitude within, that faith, that courage, that calm courage to go into these horrific scenes sometimes and see the blood and see the people hanging on to life in blue who are out there to serve others, who are putting out the fire department, putting out the fires set by the rioters and then being pelted with rocks for doing that very thing. My gosh. So it's very noble, dignified work, but it's not at all honored and respected the way it should be by many people, but many others do, and we are promising you our prayers. Thank you, Father Dan.
Hey, can we leave with prayer to St. Michael?
Oh, please, Father Brandt, lead that for us.
St. Michael, our archangel, defend us in battle. Be our defense against the wickedness and snares of the devil. May God rebuke him, we humbly pray, and do thou, O Prince of the heavenly hosts, by the power of God, thrust into hell Satan and all the evil spirits who prowl about the world seeking the ruin of souls. Amen.
Amen. Amen. Amen. Father Dan Brandt, chaplain of the Chicago Police Department, thank you so much. Take our prayers with you to those you're going to see at the hospital. Assure them that they're going to stay in our prayers.
I appreciate that, Sheila. God bless your ministry.
And you as well, Father Brandt. We'll talk again before long.
Sounds great. God bless. Take care.
You as well. My colleague and friend Ed Morrissey, good newsman, fine newsman on top of everything all the time here, is ready right now to jump in here and join me as Father Brandt goes off to take care of those in blue who are in the hospital newly are harmed by the rioters and looters, as he just said. Those are his words. And we know that's been going on for too many days now. And there it was again on our screens today, what still is. But it's another day of this. When will this stop? What would it take? What would that look like? Where are we heading? And what do we need to do about it? And Ed Morrissey joins me now, editor and writer for HotAir.com, radio talk show host, columnist for The Week and Fiscal Times, who covers these and all other news national, domestic, and global. Ed, welcome back. Thanks for being here. Thanks for filling in for me when I'm not here. Thank you for being on as my guest and friend to talk about these things. And that's what I wanted. I guess I didn't really think that that would come up with Father Dan Brandt. But Ed, you heard what he said. I mean, these are the officers that, how frustrating. I mean, you go to bring the peace or to stop the rioting that can harm more people, the violence, and you get hit with rocks and bricks. And the woman officer who's dragged by the hair. And then the fire department goes to put out a fire caused by the violent looters and rioters. And they're pelted by these things. And the racing back and forth, the cat and mouse. If the police came to this store because the smash and grab happened there, we're going to run across the street to that store. I mean, my gosh. Ed, how do you say, and today, you turn on the television again in the morning and you see, oh, they're assembling again today. And as when night falls, it gets worse every night. Where do you see this going?
Well, first off, Sheila, thanks for having me on. Great talking with you, as always. And Father Brandt was terrific. I was listening to the whole segment, and it was a great conversation. Where this is going is you're going to continue to have a vacuum, a security vacuum, and you're going to continue to see that vacuum filled with malefactors. You know, we're not talking about the protesters. And I think Father Brand is really careful about that. And we should all be careful about that. Mm-hmm. There's legitimate reasons for protests. There's legitimate reasons for demonstrations. And I like America because you can do those sorts of things.
Right.
But you can only do them really in an environment where you have peace and tranquility. And, mm-hmm. I know that Reverend Al Sharpton was speaking in Minneapolis today at the memorial service for George Floyd here, which was held this afternoon. And I didn't get a chance to watch it because I was very busy today, but I did see one quote that came out of it, which is, which I think is good, is that there's a difference between peace and quiet. And we should have peace, but we shouldn't necessarily expect quiet. And, but you can't have effective demonstrations. You can't have effective political change in an environment where you don't have peace, because then security becomes a priority above all other things. And that's what you're seeing in all of these cities, you know, in here in the Twin Cities, until you fill that vacuum with enough personnel to reimpose order, you are going to continue to see the riots, the looting, the destruction from people who are either instigating these types of things or are taking advantage of the situation to go out and loot for whatever other purposes that they have. And Father Brandt was right. As soon as if you have a limited amount of resources, as soon as those resources get assigned to one spot, they'll move to another spot. We saw the same thing here in the Twin Cities. It's a game of whack-a-mole at that point in time.
Yeah.
That's the reason why they eventually called out the National Guard and put thousands of those troops on the streets in order to impose order. And then once you have that momentum, it becomes a lot easier to secure your community. So you have the right, you can go out and effectively demonstrate for political change.
Mm-hmm. And you say it so well. I mean, that's America. That's who we are and what we do. That's what our rights are, among other things. We have so many rights in this country. And one of them is, you know, the public expression of our ideas. If it's done in a peaceful way, demonstrations are not only allowed, they're always protected by the police. I know
right.
When we have the annual different marches for life across the country, I know in Chicago, Ed, we've been out there before. I've been higher on the level of a platform as the MC of it and able to see over the crowd and see across the street on a corner, a small but vocal gathering of, say, Planned Parenthood people who want to keep abortion legal and call it health care and human rights. That's an odd saying, but they do. And you know what? There are police there protecting them. However, the police also protect the marchers. And they're marching, they're joyful. They're chanting, they're singing, they have balloons, they have signs, but it's for life. And the joy is the love of life. You know, George Floyd's death is a pro-life issue. And we need to talk about that as well. And other things like defunding police, calls for defunding police. What in the world would that look like since you've written about that on Hot Air? We're going to talk about that. And by the way, if we're talking about defunding police and now that we're onto that, can we talk about defunding Planned Parenthood? When we're talking about defunding, what would that look like in either case? Why defund this but not that? Ed Morrissey is in for that.
A Closer Look with Sheila Log-Minas.
On Relevant Radio and the Relevant Radio app.
Welcome back to A Closer Look. I'm Sheila Log-Minas here with my friend Ed Morrissey, newsman, journalist, editor, and writer of HotAir.com. He's also a columnist, radio talk show host, and columnist for The Week and the Fiscal Times, dealing with the issues of the day. And we have no lack of those to cover. It's really hard. Like, even in a one-hour show, what do you cover in a one-hour show day-to-day is a juggling act I do, and a lot of us do. And it's just, okay, it can be at times like triage, right? You know, if triage is first stop the bleeding. So first, the most urgent, important things you need to know about and we all need to be involved with. What can we do as Christian disciples in mission to be out there being a part of the solution to so many grave problems? And that's important. And then every now and then, just because we all need this, then you take a turn and then I talk with, you know, book authors and scholars and theologians and priests. Well, I just talked with the priest who's the chaplain of the Chicago Police Department, Catholic chaplain, Chicago Police Department. They have more than one chaplain, but he's also the head of the Chicago Police Chaplain's Ministry, the director of that. And he had to keep his time short because he has to get to one of the area hospitals in Chicago to see two of his officers who were just taken in this afternoon, yet again injured in the rioting that's going on. He said, and I don't mean the protests or the demonstrators, which are protected as they should be in our nation. People have that right, and they have every right to do that. He said, I'm talking about the violent looters. And therefore, two of the officers wound up in the hospital this afternoon. He asked you, folks, and me, to pray for them, to pray for the men and women in blue, to pray for their faith, their courage, their mental health, to pray that they always do the right thing, but then others do the right thing by them, to appreciate them and show them when we can. If it's no more, he said, then a silent hand over the heart when you see them, make eye contact, show them, I really appreciate you. We had a wonderful montage James put together here at the studio opening the show hour today, and it was news reporting of police officers who are actually going over to protesters or demonstrators and talking with them one at a time, one-on-one. What do you need? What are your thoughts here? We want you to know we're here with you and for you. I'll take off my helmet. I'll put down my baton. I'll walk with you. Several of those turned into hugs. Some of them handshakes and hugs, and you heard some of the who had been demonstrators and maybe still were, but say, "Oh, I love you, I love you, man, I love you," and you know that's all it takes. Cracks all the ice, right? Cracks it wide open, and now it's warmth. It's humanity. It's seeing each other as the person with dignity that each other has, and that does not get conferred by any government or by any law enforcement or by any state. It is from God, and our chaplains know that. So Father Brandt had to run, but he asked for our prayers. He asked if we could end his time here by praying, at least today, the prayer to St. Michael, and he led that. And he asked that you please keep our men and women in blue in your prayers as well. And a lot of them have been injured very seriously. And terrible things are being done to them. And there's not a lot of sympathy out there for them right now. In fact, if anything, so many of them are kind of thrown in the same basket as the officer who, I hate to even say this, much less see the video, but knelt on the neck of George Floyd. That's another matter. And so many police officers say that that's not us. That's not who we are. That's not what we do. That's that person. And a handful of bad actors or bad actions do not at all throw a blanket over all of them and say they're all alike. Nobody wants to be just shoveled into a whole group of people saying, oh, you're all alike. You know, you people. Who wants to hear the term you people? Well, we're going to continue talking about that right now. As I said, Ed Morrissey's here from HotAir.com. He covers all these issues. He's got a whole array of them on his show page, on his website today, HotAir.com. As always, Ed, I go to HotAir.com to see what's Ed posting, what are his writers posting, what's the latest on this, or that. And as I said, coming back, you know, right now, when there are calls out there to defund the police, Ryan Bomberger was on the show yesterday talking about that. They want to defund the police. In fact, do away with the police. And I thought, what would that look like? You know, who's running everything but the bad guys or the anarchists? And, you know, what's the purpose of anarchy? Nothing but the sake of anarchy. There's no other purpose. So, Ed, who's calling for defunding the police?
Well, it's interesting, Sheila, and it's something that sort of started as a grassroots response, frustration with with what people see as unresponsive, you know, police administrations, but it's been taken up by celebrities. And so you have Jane Fonda, John Legend, Chrissy Teigen, Emily Ratajkowski, Hollywood celebrities who are pushing this defund the police thing. I think John Legend is one of the primary drivers behind this. These are people, of course, who can afford to pay for their own security, and, you know, including armed security, and often do, and not for bad reasons. I mean, these are people who are in large crowds, and sometimes people are very strange around celebrities, and we've seen what happens when they don't have security, and on occasion, for instance, John Lennon, you know, and that sort of thing. So, I mean, it's not as though that those are concerns are not valid, but the rest of us have concerns about that too, and we're seeing those concerns play out in these riots and looting that are taking place in cities, including our own Twin Cities here, where I live. And so it's a little easy for people who can afford to pay for their own police departments, their own personal police departments, to tell everybody else that they don't need one. I think it's just a little facile to do that, but it's also the argument itself, the reason, one of the reasons why they cite this, and I did some digging into this today, was they mention in this promotional material for this that police budgets have gone up 220% since 1977, in a 40-year period between 1977 and 2017. Police budgets have gone up 220%. They base this on a study at the Urban Institute. The Urban Institute is a left-leaning institute, but their numbers are usually pretty solid. They usually are pretty reliable. They're straightforward on that. And so I went over to the Urban Institute to look up the information, and it's very easy to find over there. And it's true that police spending on average, or, you know, in the cumulative, went up 220%. Between 1977 and 2017. What they leave out, however, is that all state and local discretionary spending rose by at least 220% over the same period, and that the percentage of state and local discretionary spending in 1977 was just under 4%, and in 2017, it was just under 4%. It's the same percentage. In fact, it may be slightly lower percentage in 2017 than it was in 1977. And so part of this is just the fact that we're spending a lot more money on governance. Part of this, and by the way, I should say this too, that's in inflation adjusted dollars. So this accounts for inflation. It's still a 220% increase in all of this spending. So that's something that we should be thinking about, I think. Mm-hmm. But also, you know, as a percentage, it's still the same percentage. It's still the same basic commitment to policing. In that same period of time, though, of course, we've expanded what crimes there are for these police to enforce. We've expanded into areas that makes enforcement more ambiguous. And we've also then, when it's more ambiguous, when you leave police in charge of more things, but without without a really specific and objective goals in place or statutes in place, then they have to start doing a lot more judgment calls. And judgment calls is where you're going to get bias, and just not person to person bias. I'm not talking about systemic bias or systemic bigotry. The more ambiguous you make things, the more judgment calls you force police to make, the more those types of things are going to come out. And so I think that that's certainly going to be part of this. Now, Sheila, there's one other thing that they're claiming that they want in this defund the police thing. And depending on who you talk to, they say, well, we're not literally defunding, but we want to roll back funding to 1977 levels. Well, we're there. We're already at 1977 levels. But one of the issues, and I think that this is something that they're going to focus on Thursday, or today, actually, we demand community control. We demand community control of policing. Policing is, by definition, community controlled. The federal government doesn't have any authority over local police departments, except within the bounds of enforcing constitutional provisions, which is mostly done, by the way, through the courts anyway. The states have some control over it, but it's really the cities and the counties that run the police departments and the sheriff's departments that control their police departments. And that means that the community control is already there. And if people want to see those organizations reform, Sheila, they should really be putting pressure on state and state government, certainly, but city government and county government to institute these reforms. And part of that is making the police departments more accountable by removing some of the public employee union measures that reduce accountability, perhaps. The federal government could help by reducing or eliminating qualified immunity, which would force the cities and counties to shoulder a significant liability risk when police conduct misconduct. There are steps that can be taken, but the accountability really should be where the control is. And the control is for the Chicago Police Department, it's in the city of Chicago. For the Minneapolis Police Department, it's the city of Minneapolis. And until we can talk about police reform at Congress level all you want, but Congress doesn't have any authority over it. The authority to make actual changes that mean something already resides in the communities. And until it's addressed at that level, nothing's ever going to change.
That's a really good reminder. And in fact, I wanted to get into what community policing means, because I don't remember how many years ago. It just seems to me not that many. And yet, you know, I get these ballpark things wrong all the time, Ed, when it really turns out to have been a lot of years ago. But when it went from, you know, the local police force do what police do to more community policing. And a whole lot of that is relationship building in the communities, in the neighborhoods. And I know that's certainly the case in Chicago. It was called for quite a long time ago. And yet at the same time, the policing. So it's a both and thing. Well, when you have a time like now, how can you be, except for the montage we heard at the opening, again, with a lot of credit to James here, the board operator in the studio and wizard with sound, he got excellent sound to open with. It wasn't a montage, it was a news report of officers who go up to the protesters or demonstrators one at a time and talk with them. And it ends in a hug. And it ends, I mean, it just disarms somebody. No pun intended there. I mean, it's disarming to somebody who's angry. It just de-escalates fast. Wait a minute, this person's on... I mean, they're like me, and they recognize that I have the right to be here, and they want to know what can they do. And he wants to take off his police cap and put down the baton and walk with us. And all of a sudden, now, you know, they're saying to the police, I love you, and hugs and all that. So this is got to be hard, but at least it was in a more peaceful demonstration or protest, unlike these violent ones that I want to talk with you more about. And also to stay on what you just said and what community policing is and how it can't even be carried out at a time like this and how we get back to that time, especially when you have, and I'll cite this when we come back, but in a few moments, but a south side of Chicago, and anybody who knows Chicago knows the neighborhoods on the south side, west side, north side, all of it. And here's a headline. Heartbroken south side alderman doesn't understand the looting or the police response. I think we should have had a better plan, he says. That's putting it mildly. And when he asks, he's really lamenting the extensive damage to businesses in his south side ward, the ward that he's the alderman of. He also questions, and this is what the article says in the subhead, why police had not done more to prevent it. There's an answer to that. Father Dan Brandt mentioned that early in the show hour today, and I want to follow up with that as well, because you can't hamstring people and at the same time expect them to do the both and. But I want to talk about community policing, and what you're addressing, Ed Morrissey, so well is these calls, maybe not to the extent that it might like conjure up a thought in people's minds, defunding the police, what would that lead to? But you are explaining that well, and also Antifa, being exposed a bit by somebody going undercover inside and revealing what they do in some of these meetings. Not too many people have had that opportunity. You've got that on hotair.com as well. Ed Morrissey is in. Your questions as well, 888-914-9149. I have plenty for Ed on some of the articles on hotair.com. And even I love the new one you have on there, Senator Ben Sasse. He's really one of our outstanding ones who writes very, very well about being a statesman and how the Senate and the House should comport themselves in Congress. They're not. Things are devolving. So we'll talk about that as well. Ed Morrissey is in. We're going to be covering these news stories as much as we can, starting with that Southside alderman, what he's saying, what Father Dan Brandt said, chaplain of the Chicago Police Department. That next.
reaching beyond the headlines to give you the real story. A Closer Look with Sheila Logminas
on Relevant Radio and the Relevant Radio app.
Welcome back to A Closer Look. I'm Sheila Logminas here with Ed Morrissey of HotAir.com. He's an editor and writer of that radio talk show host and columnist for The Week and the Fiscal Times. We've been talking about a number of the articles on HotAir.com. Following the part of the first half of the program hour today with Father Dan Brandt. Father Brandt is the Chicago Police Department chaplain, Catholic chaplain, and also the director of the Chicago Police Chaplains Ministry. Their motto is, "Your partner has your back. We've got your soul." And he meant that. He was actually short of time, had to rush off to one of the area hospitals to tend to two of the latest officers hurt in attacks by the, as he said, in his words, the looters, the rioters, not the peaceful protesters or demonstrators. These are the ones causing the harm. And he talked about what the police are, what circumstances they're under. Ed, one of the things he did bring up, he did, and that is because I'm seeing it in a lot of places. But I thought, well, maybe I'll let him handle this. You know, lead with whatever he's willing or wants to say. But he did talk about, I guess I might have like very easily kind of, you know, you put your toe in the water kind of thing. I kind of very quickly eased into it, thinking I can pivot real fast if he doesn't want to bring it up. But it's are they asked in some places, the police officers, with all this going on in their cities and even in their suburbs, to back off or stand down? And he said yes, and I don't know why. And he did say mine's greater than mine, and with greater wisdom than I have are making those decisions. But he said I for the life of me I can't say why. So when we have this article I refer to right before the break, headline is "Heartbroken Southside Alderman Doesn't Understand Looting, the Looting, or Police Response." And he says, "I think we should have had a better plan." The subtitle of that is, "An extremely frustrated Southside alderman lamented the extensive damage to businesses in his Southside ward and questioned why police had not done more to prevent it." Ed, Father Brandt admitted, yes, they are told to stand down, and he can't figure out why. And think about what that does to police who are trained so carefully, the proper rules of engagement, that when lawlessness happens, the rule of law can lawfully be carried out. And if you're told you can't carry that out, what can you do but back off and watch it happen?
Well, that's exactly what happens here. And this is very similar to what happened in Los Angeles in 1992 and in the wake of the verdict from the initial trial of the Rodney King beating, mm-hmm. and where the four officers were acquitted of the charges, the state and local charges. And the police weren't prepared for it. For whatever reason, it was pretty clear that, you know, it had been pretty clear for hours that there was going to be a verdict that day. They weren't prepared for it. When the unrest started, when demonstrations started and people got angry, the police retreated, and they retreated back to their barracks in some cases. They pulled back out of these neighborhoods, and it was a huge mistake because it created a security vacuum into which all of the angry people, initially angry people, you know, maybe a good reason to be angry, began to act out. And what happens in those cases is that when people see a breakdown of law and order, it becomes a free-for-all, and that generates a momentum of its own. And over the next several hours in Los Angeles, those retreats ended up becoming impossible to overcome. It ended up taking the National Guard and the Army to restore order in Los Angeles several days later. And we saw this in Minneapolis and a little bit in St. Paul as well. Police just didn't put the numbers out in the streets that they needed. They didn't bring in enough of the state police. And then they took too long to bring in the National Guard. And what happens is because the police feel that they don't want to antagonize people any further, they pull back, and that pulling back creates an impression that they're retreating. Well, not an impression, they are retreating. Mm-hmm. And it basically convinces people that they have won and that they can now pillage at will. And actually, it's not even an impression again, because they did win and they could pillage at will. And And that encourages more people to get out there and pillage. I mean, it's a self-perpetuating cycle out there until you bring in enough security forces to fill the vacuum and put an end to it. And this is what happened in this article. It's really good because this alderman, his neighborhood, they pulled back out of his neighborhood. In an adjoining neighborhood, they didn't. And they didn't have the same problems over there. And I think he's got a legitimate gripe about what the orders were, what the plans were.
Yeah, I really like the lead. It just opens with this sentence. On Monday, an extremely frustrated, his last name is Brookins, lamented the extensive... Oh, no, no. Here's what it is. It took Alderman Howard Brookins Jr. the better part of two terms to convince Walmart to locate a store in his 21st ward, but it took looters only a couple of hours to destroy it. What's so sad, Ed, is when you read further down that article, it talks about when they finally are able to get in there and survey the extent of the damage. If it's so extensive that Walmart there will have to close, they're not going to rebuild. They won't get them back again. And it took him two terms to convince Walmart to even build there. There's so much damage and destruction going on here. This downstream, if you will, or ripple effect, causing so much then repercussions to the other lives, the small business owners, Ed, just like in Ferguson, right? Who right there where the fires were burning and the riots were happening. I remember this. A young woman who had either opened, I can't remember if it was a bakery or a hair shop, but she had saved her money, gotten a small business loan, opened her own shop. She was delightfully serving that community. It got destroyed. And so, or at least heavily damaged. So that got into the news and more people wanted to support her and the neighborhood came out to help clean up and that's all good. But some people's places are destroyed or their community is not going to be served by the big stores who had built there. And now forget it. We can't rebuild there again when this kind of thing happens. So, you know, to the stand down, that makes no sense when the looters see this. So to that other point about, by the next day in Chicago, there was more of a police presence and National Guard. Not that many, but there were some. So what happened? The looters and rioters moved out into the suburbs, north, south, and west. And I've said this a couple times, Ed, but my husband and I were at a Home Depot near, it was one of the towns the chaplain mentioned. On a sunny Sunday afternoon, getting flowers and stuff, when all of a sudden over the loudspeaker came the urgent hollering that all shoppers leave your cart and get out right now. And so I turned to one of the girls and said, what's going on? And she said, the looters, she said, the protesters, they're coming, they're close by. And I thought, here? I actually said to her, here? Because we were way out in the western suburbs. So my first question when I asked you, how does this end? When you talk about, when you said, Ed, and we have very little time, but that we need to reimpose order, obviously, how does that happen with given where we are right now?
Well, you have to have leaders with the will to reimpose order. And that means calling out the National Guard in sufficient numbers to reimpose it in some of these cases. Or in other cases, just simply making sure that you don't pull back the police, that you bolster the presence and you keep them out there. We never did get a chance to get to community policing, which is a great topic. But what I would also say is what you risk in these cases is exactly what happened to Alderman Brookins here. Those businesses are not coming back. They are not going to reinvest in that neighborhood if the people of Chicago are not willing to protect it. That's just simply the way it is, and it's very sad.
I'll tell you what, early next week, let's pick up this conversation and we'll talk about community policing and we'll see where we are at that point after the rest of this week into the weekend and see where we are. We can pick up from there, but community policing is going to be an ongoing important story to discuss. And meanwhile, folks, remember, Father Dan Brand, the chaplain of the Chicago Police Department, has asked you to keep them in your prayers, all police, all men and women in blue. So please do that. Ed, a pleasure as always. Thank you. We'll talk soon.
Thank you, Sheila.